the ideas, the leaders, the lives that are shaping Denmark and the world. From Blocks Hub in Copenhagen, Denmark, with your co-hosts, Ed Lay and Thomas Molhern, this is Global Denmark.
Hello, and welcome back to the Global Denmark podcast, where we explore how thought leaders and innovators are working to create a better Denmark and a better world. Well, we had the pleasure of talking with the Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador of the Year, Lara Lukkegaard, on a wonderful conversation where she called in from South Africa, where she spent the last 25 years. In this wide-ranging conversation, we explored a variety of topics, including Lara's role as a Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador, why it is she won the Ambassadorship of the Year, how she's using her network and her position to both help Denmark and also to attract South African talent to Denmark. In addition, we explore her journey and a variety of other themes connected to the Nordic House in Cape Town, and just looking at the political and the business evolution throughout the years. Without further ado, we bring you Lara Lukkegaard. We are back. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Mr. Ed Lay. Ed, how you doing?
Good. Caffeinated. Toasty. Excited to get going.
I'm right there with you. And we are live on the phone from Cape Town. We have Ms. Lara Lukkegaard. Lara, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, thanks so much for calling into the podcast today.
That's my pleasure, really. It's an honor to be part of this.
The honor is ours. We are honored to be talking to the Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador of the Year in 2019. Tell
that's
us a little
right.
bit about that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that is another honor, and must admit it came as quite a surprise. The Goodwill Ambassadors are all honorary member of this corps, and we work to help Copenhagen and thereby, of course, Denmark in all sorts of ways, business-wise and tourism, and trying to attract conferences and anything that can benefit Copenhagen and Denmark as such. There's about 60, 65 of us worldwide, and I am, after 20 years, still the only one in Africa, so I cover quite a continent. But it's more about, you know, Africa is not really the number one trading partner yet with Denmark as such, but it's still an important part. And we this year, you're right, I was named the Goodwill Ambassador of the Year. And when I say that came as a surprise to me, it's because I've, of course, seen this over the years, how my friends and fellow Goodwill Ambassadors have been named that every year. And they have been given that award for doing something completely exceptional. So could it be, I mean, anything huge that they've done for Denmark? And I've done many small things this year, but not one big thing as they usually would do. So when I was named on our last evening together at the City Hall, I burst into tears. It was quite a surprise. But the thing was, and I understood it when they basically read it out to me, it was almost like a what would they call it at the Oscars, like a lifetime achievement award. For many small things that I've done over the years. And they said things like, you know, I'm always there to promote, I'm always a smile, I am really in love with my old city and my old country. So it's not difficult to be a Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador. I mean, it really is quite a nice thing to sell out here in the world. So I always talk nicely about it. So that was nice. Thank you.
Could you talk a little bit about some of those small things you've done, just to give our audience an idea about what it is to be a Goodwill Ambassador?
Absolutely. So sometimes we work in teams, which means maybe someone from London and someone from Switzerland or Singapore. We sit worldwide and we work towards maybe it can be, promoting a conference that's going to, or we want to come to Copenhagen. For example, the Worldwide Architectural Conference, which is coming to Copenhagen in 2023. It was a bid that Copenhagen went in with, and it was quite a difficult one. And there we were actually 17 of us working really hard around the world on lobbying in our local architectural associations. So I would phone up the president of the South African Architectural Association and tell him, listen, I know you are on your way to Seoul. This was last year. And I know that you're going to vote on where you're taking the conference in 2023. I'm a Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador. I'm calling here to lobby and find out, have you got any questions? Is there anything you are in doubt about and where your vote is going? He says, well, you can keep talking, but I've already decided. I said, oh, really? Yes, I'm voting for Copenhagen. I said, okay, that was great. But what we do there is just, we, for example, we had the power to tell people, which is important here in South Africa, for example, to tell them, listen, we can roll out the red carpet for you when it comes to getting visas. We can get that done within a few days. We can assist with, you know, helping you make the right bookings and so on. So we had that sort of power with us. But all in all, it was just a phone call. But the fact that 17 of us did that, I don't know if that was swinging the vote as such, but that's something we do. Other things I've been part of is that we are constantly for 15 years now, I've been working on attracting talent to Copenhagen and Denmark, which is something we really lack. We really need a hell of a lot more engineers and people specialized in the gaming industry and and all sorts of other things. And there, every time I hear about something here in South Africa and Cape Town where that would fit in, I tell the young people, I mean, younger than me and so on, have you ever thought about taking a few years in Copenhagen and see what that is all about and getting a good job there? And people think it's impossible because how am I going to get a work permit? How am I going to live there? And isn't that expensive? I said, well, but you earn accordingly. And then you tell about the system and how it works in Denmark and you sell it that way because we really need more talents in Copenhagen. And that's been one of those that I worked on.
And what do you think, someone who is trying to attract young talents, what are some of the messages that you think are that work the best?
See, what they've heard about, and not really, it's more like the myths they've heard about, the high taxes and the bad weather, and I've heard that a beer is 150 Rand, which is whatever, and so on. And then, you know, and you tell them, yes, but you will have you will earn so and so maybe. And yes, you are paying high taxes, but then everything is paid for. You don't have to take out a medical aid. You don't have to pay for your children's schooling. You are getting a red carpet with regards to integration. And so on, because you come there as a highly qualified person that we really need. And you tell them the whole package, and I tell them how I compare it to how I live here. And yes, I pay less tax, not a hell of a lot less tax, but I pay less tax. But I have to pay for my children's school because I'd like them to go to a good school. I pay very high for my medical aid here and a lot of other things. So all in all, it's more or less the same. So people are very, you know, focused on this whole thing about what it costs. Then, of course, I tell them about what they can experience there, which is so different from here, which is more of the way of living in Denmark. We talk about the hygge and all of that, you know, because we need to sell these things as positive. And yes, I'm going to tell you that four months of the year, it is dark, but that's where the candles come out and that's where the Christmas feeling come out and all of that. I can tell that story with something that I miss, even though that I'm not living there. So,
and how did you get into this this game? What was the incentive for you to be active in the Goodwill Ambassador Corps?
That's two questions, actually. The first one is how I got a call, basically, from someone who was part of running it back then in 1999, because I also just had my 20th anniversary this year. And they called me up and said, listen, we've heard about you, read about you, and we would like to have a Goodwill Ambassador in Africa, and it seems like Cape Town is the place to be, and would that be something you would consider? And back then it was more like, I wouldn't call it a grassroots thing, but it was very much a much less organized than it is today. And I said, sure, but I basically said, but I'm doing that already. I'm already promoting Denmark and Copenhagen. It's not difficult. And then they said, well, we'd like to have you on board. And since then, I've actually I've been an active Goodwill Ambassador. I've even been to all the annual meetings, except I think once where I was about to give birth and another time where a child was sick and so on. But otherwise, I've been there every year in August for the meetings. So I am a very active part of it. And the other question was, what do I get out of it? I'm often asked that, especially when I tell them that we're not paid. I even pay for my own flight ticket going there every August to being part of it. But what I get out of it is, there's something about giving back and giving it in general that I think is something that make all of us happy. Some people do it through their church. Some people do it in charity work. Some people do it in, you can do it in many different ways. This is one of those that I give where I feel very happy when I do so. And as I also said, it's not difficult to talk about Copenhagen and sell it as such. And the number one thing that I've got back from this is the best network that I've ever been part of. So those 60 other Goodwill Ambassadors, there's about 8-10 of them that are on my best friend list. We go and we visit each other worldwide. We go to each other's, weddings and whatever it might be and so on. We're really very, very close after all these years. And that's also a business network, so that if I need to get a good contact out in Hong Kong, I know exactly who to call, or sell a product in the US, I know who to call, and the other way around, when people want to do something here in South Africa, they can take advantage of the fact that they know me.
The opportunities to promote Denmark, is that a stumble upon thing? And if it is, what is it that you do with your day to day that allows you to stumble upon it? Or is it something where you literally go out of your way to explore opportunities to promote Denmark?
Both, absolutely. So I can tell you an example. This morning I was at the gym, and afterwards I just sat down to have a cup of coffee in the cafeteria there. And someone sat next to me and overheard me in a conversation. And afterwards, he said, what's your language? I said, I'm from Denmark. He said, oh, my wife and I, we've thought about actually visiting Copenhagen, but then we went to Paris instead this year, but maybe in 2 years' time. And I give him my card, my Copenhagen Goodwill Ambassador card, and I said, you should do that and look me up and ask me if there's anything. So tiny things like that, One of the things that I've worked hard on the last 2 years at least is where I'm actively searching also to find the right people to lobby again here. We are both Copenhagen and Cape Town are working quite hard on getting a direct flight between the two cities. And in general, I don't really care which of the airlines that go in and do that. But I mean, obviously, it would be either Scandinavian Airlines or Norwegian or South African Airlines.
That would be fantastic.
That would be absolutely wonderful, I mean, for me and for many others. But there you go in much more strategically. So I work together with my colleagues in wonderful Copenhagen Airport, and the equivalent here in Cape Town, which is called Westgro, which is the one that attracts business here, and then with Cape Town Airport. And then we go in and I've been in meetings with some of the airlines where they have called me in just to sit in and I can do my talk. And because the Wescrow here, they don't necessarily know all the Scandinavian companies that work out of Cape Town, which is some, you know, part of the statistics they need. Okay, I can say, well, H&M has their headquarter here, Maersk has their headquarter here in Cape Town, not in Johannesburg, and so forth. And, you know, and then we look at some of the tourism figures and how many tourists. And, of course, it's mostly Danes and Southern Swedes that travel this way on holiday. But there are more and more South Africans who are looking at traveling to Copenhagen and see what that's all about. And then I helped them help Copenhagen invite South African journalists and bloggers and Instagrammers to come to Copenhagen to tell the story so we can get the stories out here in South Africa about how wonderful Copenhagen is.
That's terrific. Now, you mentioned before that the Ambassador Corps, you have a very close network there. And I'm just curious, for you, what does it mean to be a global Dane? You know, for Ed and I, we can almost identify within first 5 minutes of a conversation whether a Dane we're talking to has lived abroad. Mm-hmm. And it's something in just the common understanding, the mentality. How do you look at your own identity?
Well, I've got a tagline on, I think it's on Twitter and on my WhatsApp account. And for many years, I called myself a Cape Townian Dane and a Danish Cape Townian. Yeah. So I'm not yet South African. I am actually applying for citizenship here so I can have dual like my children. But yes. I'm a global Dane because of the values that I come from and the values that I carry with me here. I am known both amongst my friends and my children's friends and my business contacts here in South Africa. They know me as Danish, and they know that because of that, they can trust me. So they've understood that this whole thing about being Danish and being from Denmark, this is where trust is one of our biggest resources, basically. And they've understood that someone who's from Denmark is generally someone you can trust. And that's quite a big flag to carry around, you know, because you also have to live up to it, of course.
And carry your actual flag as well.
Exactly. And I am Danish. I love Denmark. I also love South Africa. But I'm one of those who I'm not half Danish and half South African. I'm 100% both in many ways, you know. And I will always be Danish. I mean, there's nothing that can take that away from me. Many of the ways that I do business and the ways that I interact with people is also part. I mean, it's also the way I'm brought up and the country I'm brought up in that definitely comes out there as well. That's for sure.
You mentioned what happened in the gym for you this morning, where you struck up a conversation with a person. That's not something that you would see as typical for a Danish person. Is that something that you could have seen yourself doing when you lived here, or is it something a change in you since you've moved?
That's a good question. I think I am that type of person that would do it, but to be quite honest, I've actually never tried to be a grown-up in Denmark,
right.
But you know what? No, it wouldn't be typical Danish when you live in Denmark. You're right. I also see it, for example, when I'm in Copenhagen and spend some weeks there every year and so on. And if I see a tourist standing on a corner looking at their map or their Google map or something, I walk up to them and say, hi, is there anything I can help you with? And I don't know if Danes in Denmark do that. I'm sure some do, but I don't know if they generally do that. Maybe there's a service side of me that will do that because I'm a global Dane, because I live outside. It's a good question. I'm not sure how I would have developed if I lived in Denmark.
Well, Laura, you've been in South Africa now for over 25 years.
That's right.
And for our audience, both Danes and abroad, What are some keys to doing business in South Africa if you want to break into that market?
Sure. So this is, of course, what I help Scandinavian companies do here. First of all, I say, because I've been here so many years, it's actually not difficult to do business in South Africa. If you've never been here, you hear Africa before you hear South Africa. And you know, Africa is just, you think, no, this is impossible. It's a completely different way they do things. And it is, of course, in many ways. South Africa is, however, regulated and run somehow like something we're used to. It's not difficult to set up a company. You can pretty easily get into how we conduct labor law and company law and so on. That's one thing. That's the admin side of things. It is still a country, I would say it's a land of opportunity still. And if we have amazing Danish products and services that do well in Europe or throughout the world, I would say that there's a pretty good chance it could do well in South Africa as well. There are many things that go very well. I mean, the country has been in a turmoil now over the past 10 years at least, politically and so on, and thereby, unfortunately, also economically. But that's about to turn around. And just yesterday, our president was declaring over a quarter billion rand investments coming in now and so on. So it's it's a country where if you have a product or a service that fit in either to the 57 million consumers here, some of them very poor, some of them extremely wealthy, and a lot of us in between, or if you have a product or service that fit into, for example, how we solve some of our big challenges here within energy, climate, clean water and that type of thing, you definitely have a chance. But also consumer goods. I mean, I helped H&M a few years ago set up in South Africa. It's one of their best markets in the world. And they hit that sweet spot with all the middle class and a little bit on each side, you know, sort of consumers. And they were missing that affordable fashion option here and many other things. So it is a different country to do business in, and I would always advise people just to hold hands with someone in the beginning who knows how to do it, for example me, or someone else. But really, it's a way of when people get here and want to do business here, they fall in love with the place. I mean, everybody falls in love with South Africa the moment they've been here. It gets under your skin, and you just want to make an excuse to do business here. There's no doubt about it.
You mentioned before we started recording that you moved there 25 years ago, shall we say, somewhat under duress, and within a very short amount of time you turned around. So what were some of the myths that were in your mind before you left, and what was it that turned you around?
Yeah, I think just to get it into perspective, I was offered a position end of 92 to fly down here in February 93. And February 93 was 14 months before the first democratic election in South Africa. It was just 3 years after Mandela got out of prison, and they were busy with the transition and making sure that we would have this free and fair election and we would be this amazing democracy that we are today. But at that stage, we thought we were maybe heading into a civil war, or South Africa and the world thought that. And I was offered to go down to Cape Town to set up Cape Ads, which is the equivalent of the Blå Avis in Denmark. And I didn't know a single person in South Africa. I was 26 years old. I had a telephone number of the lawyer who was going to set up my company. And I arrived. I had a one-week booking at a hotel. And from then on, I was on my own. Had to find a place to live, start employing people, find out who was going to print my paper, and so forth. And it was, as I said beforehand, I felt I was doing this company a favor because this South Africa was a horrible country. I mean, that's what I learned in school. I was, even as a teenager, I was a member of the anti-apartheid movement in Denmark. I mean, it was one of my, you know, things that I was quite passionate about. So I really felt I did them a favor, and I told them up front, I will do it for maximum 1 year, and then I'll make sure someone else will be in ready for the position and can take over. And it took me 2 weeks after I arrived. And February in Cape Town is peak summer and 30-35 degrees. The beaches are beautiful. The mountain and the sunshine is just taking your breath away. And I called up my employer and I said, we can definitely extend with another year, because I was just so in love with
you're
this place
right
already.
Away.
Completely. And I think I also mentioned just before we started recording, I said, you know, it's been almost 27 years for me now, and I have not had a single day where I thought I should live somewhere else but Cape Town.
Laura, let me ask you something. We talk to a lot of, you know, young Danes that haven't been abroad before. What would you say the ROI is in leaving your comfort zone and going abroad?
Yeah. You know what? It's actually, I would think it's easier now. First of all, do it before you get hitched and have family and so on. Just that's the easiest way. I mean, go and explore and be courageous. I mean, it doesn't work out, but I can go home, you know, and then do that. But just do it. And I think the reason why I think it's even easier now is that you can actually research so much now. I mean, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have mobile phones, we didn't have Facebook, we didn't have all these things when I left in 93. And
my God, how did you survive?
I know, exactly. And, you know, I mean, I sent common letters back to my family and friends in Denmark when I arrived here on a telefax, you know, one of those with the roll, you know. And I would sit, you know, in the evenings or over the weekend and sit and feed this little telefax machine for the kiosk down close to where my mom lives or my friend's workplace or something like that, just to tell them about how it was here in South Africa. And we didn't know much, because all we were told was, of course, the things that I thought was horrible about South Africa. I mean, the news were only telling you the bad stuff. So what I'm saying to the young people now, just do it. Just do it. I mean, and do it the earlier, the better. And you can always get back to your studies, or do it right after your studies, or make sure it's part of your studies maybe. Go and live abroad for a semester and then see if it's something for you. Having said that, actually, I know, just quickly want to say that my oldest child is 17 and a half, almost 18, and he's got triple nationality. His father is Swedish, I'm Danish, and he has South African passport as well, both my sons have. And he's now looking at attending the film school in Ebeltoft in Denmark when he's done in a couple of years' time here with his basically the equivalent of his high school, the gymnasium in Denmark. And I'm as a mother, I'm now like kind of, you know, have separation anxiety. I don't want him to leave. And of course I do, because of course they must go and explore the world. This is what I did, you know, and they
should
too.
That doubleness. Yeah, exactly. They'll be fine.
Yeah,
he'll be fine. That's the trouble with being a trailblazer. People tend to follow.
Yes. Yeah.
Can we pivot a little and talk about the concept showroom that is Nordic House, and could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. Okay. So I have, over the years I've been here, I have often seen, I've helped very big companies setting up here, and some of them I've been managing director off and on, but I also have had quite a few small or medium-sized Danish companies or Scandinavian companies who've approached me over the years and said, we really want our product to get into South Africa. We know that South Africa and Africa could be a good market for us. We really understand that. But we cannot afford setting up an office, sending down a person to be managing director and all of that. We don't have the finances to do so. And all of this led me to, a few years ago, 6-7 years ago, I started having these thoughts. said, what if I could give them a safe start, a platform, a stepping stone into this market? And I just came up with the name Nordic House, and mostly as a concept, and say, well, I can help you here. Let me make a showroom for you, which I did in that name for a few Danish companies. And I still use the name when I help someone like that. But about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, quite a few companies said to me, why don't you actually make a Nordic house, like a building, a Nordic house, where we could rent office space or showroom space or retail space. We would like to have some cultural events. And then I spoke to our Nordic embassies. They are all situated in Pretoria. And yeah. Pretoria is 1,500 kilometers away from Cape Town, which is, I think...
Not right down
like,
the road, yeah.
No, it's like kind of from Copenhagen to Rome almost or something like that. And I said, as they said to me, Laura, the parliament is in Cape Town. Every year in February when the parliament opens, we need to have many meetings. We need to have cocktail parties. We need to have... events, political events and cultural events and whatever it might be, we need to rent space. And every time we do that, we rent a space, a conference room in a hotel. It's boring. It doesn't look Scandinavian. It's not representative of who we are. The bigger countries such as the US and China and Germany and so on, they all have a separate setup in Cape Town as well. Yeah. You know, residents and maybe even a consul general and so on. Yeah. We don't have that. Our countries are too small. So they said to me, why don't you do it? And I mean, I went out to have a look at a few buildings that were between 3,000 and 5,000 square meters. And I had a lot of backing. Unfortunately, it ended up being at the same time as I was going through a divorce. And I thought, no, you know what? I need to just concentrate on the clients where I can send an invoice right here and now, you know, to yes. survive now having two households, you know. So yes. So life came in between. But the whole concept is still there. And there's still people to this day who will come and tell me, Laura, you must do it. Why don't we just, we can even start organically with a small space.
It sounds like a fantastic idea. I hope you can get the funding necessary to make it happen. It sounds great.
Exactly.
Perfect. Well, Laura, we are very mindful of the time. And okay. I think we are going to take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back to wrap up the podcast with our quickfire round.
Studying for an executive MBA at Henley Business School in Denmark is an intense and rewarding experience. If you want to achieve the best possible outcomes in business and in life, Henley can give you the skills and knowledge you need through the Henley MBA. For more information, visit henley.dk.
Hello and welcome back to our quick fire round. The questions will be quick fire. Your answers don't need to be. What habits, routines, and rituals do you have on a daily basis or semi-frequent basis to maintain your mental or physical sharpness?
Oh, I have to exercise and I have to meditate. I have to. it's become a big part of what I do. And I do read up on a lot of news, both South African and from Denmark. But the fresh air and exercise and meditation is big for me.
And what do each of those look like? If we take exercise first, what type of exercise are we talking about?
Well, it often becomes after school drop with the kids. It becomes like kind of go to the gym for a little hour or so. It can also be, if I don't get around to do that, it can be in the middle of a day. I'll just put on good shoes and go for a brisk walk. And then, of course, we have the mountain range here in Cape Town, the Table Mountain Range, and go for a hike for a couple of hours. It's just, I mean, it blows your mind in many ways.
The mountain, what's that? I haven't seen one of those in years.
I know. That's one of those things. You come from one of the flattest countries, and then you live in the city with the most beautiful and actually the oldest mountain in the world. It is stunning.
Laura, have you ever gone any one event or experience that you credit with a major leap forward in your performance or the person you've become?
Yeah, I think that would be the opportunity to move to South Africa. It really has changed my life. I don't even want to speculate or what my life would have been like if I hadn't been offered that job back in 92, 93. It has changed me. I mean, I never saw that in the cards, that I was going to live in a foreign country, let alone in at the tip of Africa.
Had you been abroad before that for an extended amount of time?
No, not for an extended amount of time. That's not true. Sorry, I lived in Hamburg for 1.5 year when I got this job offered, actually. I had already lived, almost like Hamburg is just a few hours away. It's like nowadays I don't see it as far away. But of course it made me very aware of how to do business in Germany, which is different from Denmark, and how to live there, and of course became fluent in German. And I will always treasure my time there. But other than that, I had only been on holidays in different countries.
And do you speak the language where you are, or is it primarily English that's spoken there?
It's primarily English. Well, it's that theoretically, I mean, that's wrong. If English is the common language here, well, we've got 11 official languages, and some of the other languages, there are many more first language speakers of isiXhosa and Zulu and Zoto, for example, than English. But they also speak English. I mean, that's the most beautiful thing about the South African is that they all speak at least two languages, and it's some of them speak five.
Wow.
It's not unusual at all.
And have you had an attempt at learning any of the languages?
Listen, I can sing our national anthem, which is in four different languages. I can do
the
some
national
meetings.
Anthem is in four different languages.
Yes, so that was done in four different languages, which is back in 94 when we got our new democracy. We needed a new national anthem, like we needed a new constitution and many more things. So that was put together by some of the biggest languages and some existing songs that were here already.
And what's the atmosphere like over there at the moment, post-World Cup victory?
You mean this recent victory this Saturday?
Yeah.
Euphoric. Absolutely euphoric. No, honestly, this weekend, I've
We're talking about rugby, correct?
Yeah.
About rugby.
I was thinking, wait, what?
Exactly. And being Danish, of course, that's not really a big thing at all in Denmark. I mean, we hardly know what rugby is. But and actually, after 26, 27 years here, I mean, please, you will never get me to explain the rules. I know the rules of football, soccer, but not of rugby. But the atmosphere we had this past Saturday, we also had in 95, when I just a couple of years after I arrived here, when we won the World Cup the first time, where Mandela was around, where he went on the pitch, you know, and I mean, it was just that it's a unifying thing. Sport is a unifying thing. And last time I experienced that was in 92 in Copenhagen in Denmark. So
the European football.
When Denmark won over Germany then, and it was actually at the time that I lived in Germany, but at least I was in Copenhagen, thank goodness, when it happened.
Were you able to attend the 2010 World Cup in football?
Yes, I was.
What was the instrument there? What's the instrument they play there that makes that noise in the stadium?
Vuvuzela.
The vuvuzela, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, we love it down here, but the rest of you hate it.
I remember I got used to it by the end of the cup, and then
I think they even tried putting in a filter when they were broadcasting everywhere else, you know. But it's such a big part of the South African sports equipment. I was about to say, or something we bring along, you know. No, it was amazing. It was also a unifying thing for South Africa. It was very important for the country that we had the World Cup then. Very important.
South Africa going through another sort of reunification now. You mentioned more political stability on its way than economic.
Yes. Yes, there's definitely there's a shift going on at the moment, but without being too political and negative here, I mean, we've had 10 years with another president who basically is very corrupt and has run the country in the very wrong direction. And now, since we've had Ramaphosa coming in last year, we are now changing this whole country. But it's like a super tanker that you have to turn 180 degrees. It's not something that happens overnight. And there's really a lot that needs to be tidied up and put back in place or made better and so on. And the number one thing, of course, is to make sure that our education and our infrastructure and our economic situation gets better. And the best thing is that the rest of the world really would like to invest in South Africa. They see it as a stepping stone into the rest of Africa. And everybody knows that in 20 years' time, we might have 2 billion people in Africa and not 1.1 or 1.2 as we are now. And we will be... it will be a much better economic situation here. So it is changing slowly and too slow for many, but it is changing. And I see it with the Danish companies that are contacting me and contacting the embassy and others here. They really would like to come and do business here. Mm. Yeah.
If you were invited to a dinner party and you could invite just two people from history, alive or dead, and one of them couldn't be Nelson Mandela, who would you invite and why?
Yeah. I would invite, oh my goodness, you do get these questions once in a while. I know you want to answer something clever. Actually, I wouldn't mind. It would to be a really fun and interesting dinner party. I would want Churchill. And let's say someone in, thinking of, what's the name of the wife of the American president?
Roosevelt? Oh,
yes, exactly.
Eleanor.
His wife.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
Exactly. And oh, why? Gosh, I would have loved to sit and talk with her. That would not be a rowdy, fun, you know, drinking dinner party. That would be more of the...
Oh, tell that to Churchill.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't know if I put the two of them together. Maybe I can have two separate dinner parties, you know. Yeah. Yeah, no, she's quite amazing, or was quite amazing in my view.
Excellent. Do you have a quote or value or principle that you live by to help you make tough choices?
Yes, I have one, and I don't have an English translation of it. It's actually a Karen Blixen quote in Danish, and it's hanging here next to me because I have actually... had it around for a long time. Yes. Frygt ikke det utrolige. Vi ikke tilbage for det fantastiske. Og når du er i tvivl, vælg da den farligste og mest uhørte løsning.
Did you get that out?
Yeah, absolutely.
that is a beautiful quote. How would you try to translate the essence of that for
me?
Maybe a little bit back to what we spoke about earlier. Sometimes you just need to be courageous. You just need to not always choose the easy path, especially if you want to have a little bit more fun than just kind of the usual. I mean, and choosing the not so easy path is also, for example, choosing to live in a place like South Africa, because I'm faced every single day when I drive around or walk around or am I in doing my shopping or working or whatever I'm doing with extremes. So I could choose to not live here and not see extreme poverty and extreme wealth for that matter, but extreme poverty especially, and look away from it. I could choose, also even here in South Africa, I could choose to live in a bubble behind a big electric fence and just see people and interact with people like me. I could choose that, but it's difficult. And apart from that, I don't want to. So that's not when we learn. We don't learn. We don't grow. We don't change. We don't evolve if we don't put ourselves out there a little bit. If not in danger, then at least give ourselves some challenges. You know, just see the world with different eyes.
Well said.
I think.
Did you have a teacher or a mentor when you were younger that most influenced you?
Yes, I had a teacher, Preben Niemann, my math teacher. He was unbelievable. He not just teaching maths, I loved maths, but also an incredible human being. And he actually happened to be my teacher from grade 1 till grade 10. And that was quite unusual. And by the way, we were the only class he ever taught, because he was the vice principal and we were the only class he ever taught. And maybe that was part of it, but anyway, so he was amazing. And then one of my first employers, Frank Ludesen, who was then the managing director of Den Blå Avis, he was situated in Aarhus, and he taught me a lot of what I know and have dealt with and done in all jobs and companies I've had afterwards, especially when it comes to how you deal with staff and difficult situations. He has really been a mentor. He is, thank goodness, still a very good friend today. So, yeah.
Do you deal with staff and difficult situations?
Yeah, so for example, in South Africa, especially when I arrived here, South Africans of all colors, races, creed, cultures, and whatever, had unfortunately grown up in with a schooling system and a system in general, a society where you learn to copy and paste. So if whatever was written on the board at school, you have to copy and remember and just be able to paste it when you did an exam or something like
I've
that.
I've been there.
Yeah, I'm sure, because, I mean, a lot of other countries have done that as well. I'm sure it might have happened in Denmark also before our time. And that's where I've learned how we in Denmark have learned to think for ourselves and to stand up for what we believe in. And we are encouraged to have an opinion. We're encouraged to argue and to work responsibly, but independently. So in all the companies I've had here or run here or been part of here, I try to tell people, we have this challenge. My staff, I'll tell them, we have this challenge and I'd like you to find a way of solving it and let me know your suggestions. And they, in the beginning, back in the 90s, they would go cold. They would like kind of, you know, she's testing us. I said, no, I'm not testing you. I'd like you to come up with a good idea. And that was so far away from the way that they were brought up and how they were taught to think or not think.
Yeah, go ahead, with that consensus-based approach.
Exactly, and you kind of and that has been a big one. That's been a big challenge in my employer life here, to I wouldn't say teach it, but kind of, you know, delegate and make people trust that I actually mean it when I say I'd like you to come up with a solution. Of course you can bounce it on me. Of course you can ask me what I think about it, and I will give you my input. But I'd love you to tell me how you think we should do it.
What book or books have you been most gifted or been most influenced by?
Yeah, there's a little book that Desmond Tutu, our former archbishop here, he's written quite a few, but there's a little book that I keep giving people, actually. It's called Forgiveness. It's something I have, I think the older we get as well, the more we know that we have to let go of things we can't change, for example, or we have to at least not give it bad energy or too much energy if we can't change it. And when we forgive, it's not for the other person's sake. It's for our own sake, because this is how we live and how we carry on with life. And I think that's been a big one for me, because there's been a few times, of course, I guess, in everybody's life where you would have to forgive someone, or if you don't, you're the one who ends up with the bitterness and giving the other person free rental space in your brain, as they call it, you know. Mm. That's just a waste of energy, you know. But forgiveness is big, and that little book I've often given, actually, as a gift.
Excellent. Well, Laura, we're going to wrap up the podcast today with one final question.
Sure.
And that is a question we ask to all of our guests. Namely, what do you think Denmark can teach the rest of the world? And what do you think Denmark can still learn from the rest of the world, and maybe through your work?
Mm, definitely. I mean, I said it earlier. In my view, our number one resource in Denmark is trust. We need to protect that. We need to all live up to it. We need to spread that throughout the world. And you don't get someone else to trust you unless you trust, you know. So it's a little bit like they say, you have to smile to the world to smile back to you. So I think trust is the number one thing. And the way we deal with each other and respect each other in general in Denmark, as there's many others, you know, things like our democracy and our education system and whatnot, you know. But trust is the number one thing. And what could Denmark learn from the rest of the world? I think Denmark could learn from South Africans, for example. South Africans are much better at having eye contact with strangers. We're much better at giving each other compliments, standing in the queue in the supermarket and say, hey, gosh, I love your shoes. Or interact with the guy or the lady who works at the till or in the bank or whatever it is. And where we are in Denmark, we can be a little bit too private and too protective of ourselves. We're a little bit afraid of actually talking to someone else sometimes, you know. I think, and the South Africans are the complete opposite. They are the friendliest bunch in the world, and they generally mean it when they say something nice to you or invite you home. They actually really mean it.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in and share your story with us.
Sure, it's been my pleasure as well. Thank you for listening to me.
Before we go, is there anywhere where our audience can find you or follow your work or get connected?
I think the easiest way is LinkedIn. That's a platform I use quite a lot. So just look up my name and put in Cape Town or South Africa, and I'm pretty sure I'm the only one with that name down here. And that I think is the easiest, yeah.
Excellent. Well, Laura Lukago, an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much for having me.
And to our audience, don't forget to jump over to iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you download and listen to podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review, tell your friends, sing it from the mountaintops, and help our podcast continue to grow as we drive conversations to teach lessons to and from Denmark. And until next week, see you on the GDP.
Are you getting the most out of your time in Denmark? Pick up the printed copy of the English language newspaper Copenhagen Post today to access relevant news and event information guaranteed to enhance your working and family life.